My name's Matt Weiser. I'm a reporter for the Sacramento Bee in California, where we also have a lot of levees. In fact, we may be the second only to New Orleans in flood risk. Maybe worse, depending on how you look at it, how you measure it. But we have our share of levee issues and flood problems where I come from, too. And we're here just about up on the 10th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina and all that it did to the New Orleans area and everything we learned about it. But we're here today to talk about how we look at levees, how we measure levees, and how we decide whether they're up to the job of protecting us. And we have three great speakers here to help us understand that. First is Tammy Conforti. She runs the levee safety program for the Army Corps of Engineers in Washington, D.C. Then we have Wendell Curoll, who runs the South Lafourche Levee District. Did I get the name right?
That's correct.
Okay. Which is mostly rural area, is that correct?
We're kind of home to the port that supports 90% of all deep offshore oil.
Okay. About 30 miles south of New Orleans. And then to his left, we have David Rogers, who is a professor of geological engineering at Missouri University of Science and Technology. David was a co-author on a National Research Council study last year that looked at the National Flood Insurance Program and how it's sort of managed between the Army Corps and FEMA, how their activities jointly affect the National Flood Insurance Program, and we'll talk about that some more in a minute. But first, I'm going to give each of our speakers a few minutes to make some introductory comments. A couple of them have some PowerPoint slides they're going to show us, and then we'll get into some discussion. So we'll start with Tammy. Tammy oversees levee inspection programs from kind of a national perspective and also risk management issues when it comes to levees and flood risk. So we'll let Tammy kick it off.
Okay. Thank you, Matt, and thanks for inviting me to this conference, and I'm happy to be here. I just want to say a few words overall about the Corps of Engineers Levee Safety Program. So when I think back a few years of when the Corps of Engineers established our agency-specific levee safety program, I imagine it, envision it as a situation where we were sitting around a table and the table was covered with about 1,000 puzzle pieces. And in our minds, we had a vision on what that puzzle was going to look like. It was going to look like a program that's going to use risk-informed decision-making to help evaluate, prioritize, and justify levee safety decisions. It's going to look like a program that is going to be involved in making recommendations to help reduce risk to life safety. It was going to be a program that we were going to implement what we call shared solutions, because we all recognize that not everyone's going to have the 100% solutions to some of our issues. And we saw it as a program that was going to be targeted towards increasing general public awareness about the benefits and risks associated with levees. So when we look at all these puzzle pieces in our own agency, we had a lot to deal with. We had a lot of levee-related activities going on. We had many, many different authorities and programs that could overlap. And then on top of that, we wanted to work with other federal agencies. Most of our levees have local levee sponsors, and we have their considerations and community priorities to take into account. And all of this was really under a bigger umbrella of constrained resources. So how do we get all these pieces and activities lined up and then create thus a levee safety program where we can accomplish those objectives we've set? So what I see, and I've been in this position now for 7 years, what I see that's great and super exciting about the time we're in right now is our activities are lining up. And I think in the very near term, we're going to see a lot of activities push forward lining up what we've been doing and talking about for the last few years when we talk about risk-informed decision-making and so forth. So I just want to mention now just a few of the accomplishments that we've done to date under the Levee Safety Program. So the first one I want to talk about is the National Levee Database, and that is a database of levee information that's to serve as a national resource. So it's a living database. Currently, it was released to the public in October 2011. And it currently houses detailed information of about 14,500 miles of levees that are currently under a Corps of Engineers authority. But since that time, we have been expanding the information in the database. It now includes information for levees and by the Bureau of Reclamation. And what we've been really working on this past year is integrating FEMA data that they've collected on levees through their National Flood Insurance Program mapping efforts. And so they're providing us information on an additional 15,000 miles of levees that we did not have information on before. So that is a really big expansion. So from this point forward, we're going to continue to expand the information in the National Levee Database, and we're also going to, starting this year, make some improvements to the National Levee Database and make it more user-friendly and really just based on feedback that we've received to date on it. Matt mentioned levee inspections. That's definitely an area within the Corps that's evolved over the last few years. We started out by first improving it by developing consistent levee inspection standards, or we commonly refer to them as the levee inspection checklist, and a rating system. We apply those standards to any levee that the Corps of Engineers inspects. We use an automated computer tablet now when we're out conducting these inspections. Most everyone is generally familiar with what we call the routine inspection, which is the inspection we do typically every year. In 2009, we introduced a new type of inspection we now conduct. It's called the periodic inspection. The concept there are based on our experience in the dam safety program. And the periodic inspection, we're going to continue to do those regularly, but in a less frequent basis than the routine inspection. So the periodic inspections are really a more comprehensive inspections. They're conducted by a multi-agent or multidisciplinary team. And what it is a really comprehensive look at the levee system in addition to data, information, and design review. So our goal for periodic inspections was to complete all the initial periodic inspections on federally authorized levees within the Corps of Engineers Levee Safety Program. And we're 80% complete in finishing those periodic inspections. The next thing I just want to mention here as an accomplishment and evolving field are the risk assessment area. We've come a long way in the last couple of years in developing a risk assessment methodology that we're going to apply to levee systems. And we call it a scalable process. And what that means is we adjust the level of detail we use in a risk assessment in accordance to the type of decision we want to make about the area with the levee. So, for example, we would do a different type of level of detail risk assessment in an area where we're conducting a study where we might be looking at a wide array of different alternatives versus a risk assessment that we might perform to hone down more details to optimize a specific design. So there would be different types of level of detail for each type of risk assessment. What we've been aggressively pursuing in the last few years is what we're calling a screening level risk assessment. And we're going to perform a screening level risk assessment on every levee under the core authority in our inventory. And that's about 2,500 levee systems. And a screening level risk assessment is a coarse risk assessment that combines existing information along with engineering judgment. And we evaluate potential consequences. We roll all that up together. And what the result is we're going to be able to quickly characterize the risk associated with each levee system. And what we're going to do with that information is the Corps is going to be able to set programmatic priorities across our portfolio of levees. On an individual levee basis, these screening results are going to be a good initial start of risk information that could be used to promote risk communication, set some near-term actions, and then look in the long term of what would need to be done to help reduce that risk. I'll quickly mention some near-term efforts, bigger efforts that we'll have coming over the next year. So We are developing a process now in order to change the way the Corps is going to begin communicating and providing information about our levee systems. And we're going to start providing and talking about levees all in a risk context. So I mentioned screenings that are going to really provide us with that initial risk information. From this point forward, what we're going to do is, for example, we're going to build upon that risk information that we have on a levee system. So when we do an inspection, which is a physical look at the levee system, what we'll do is we'll have the inspection report, but we're going to answer the question of how that inspection may or may not impact the risk associated with that levee. So it's really that philosophy now of using risk as the framework in which to talk about recommendations, setting priorities, and so forth. So we know this is a slightly different approach than what people are used to, where we would just hand inspection ratings, where we might provide information on the EACHs. We've been working on this process now for some time. We've been working very closely with FEMA on it because they're going to be a key player in us being able to implement this approach. I want to mention the new direction for the rehabilitation program that we're working on. The rehabilitation program is also known as the Rehabilitation and Inspection Program, or it's commonly referred to as the PL 8499 program, which stands for public law. This is a program which is voluntary, and a public sponsor can voluntarily sign up for this program, and in exchange, they agree to maintain their flood risk management project to certain operation and maintenance standards that we provide them. If they meet all those criteria, then they are eligible for rehabilitation assistance if that project is damaged during a flood or storm event. What we're completely changing is the eligibility criteria, you know, which had been viewed as all or nothing approach. You know, we have to meet a list of O&M requirements or we don't get rehabilitation. And the feedback we were hearing is that forces people to maybe focus on activities that are not the highest risk activities that they should be focusing on. So the new direction we want to take is we want to focus more on promoting and encouraging broader flood risk management activities, such as evacuation planning, risk communication, and we still believe that having a sound maintenance program for the project is still very important. So right now with the rehabilitation program, we're soliciting ideas on what new eligibility requirements should look like and how we would measure them in order to determine if a public sponsor would be eligible for rehabilitation assistance. We're developing the documents in order to post a advance notice for proposed rulemaking, and it's going to be associated with the CFR. It's CFR 33203, and that's the CFR that's associated with the rehabilitation program and other policies that we implement under Public Law 8499. Real quick about core FEMA alignment. I know that's a hot topic that's now, and I think we're moving.
Tammy, before you go there, I think you would like to talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
But I'm going to move things along and have Wendell give a brief introduction. Sorry to cut you off there.
Well, thank you. I'm the general manager of the South Lafourche Levee District. We're 30 miles south of New Orleans. In fact, didn't bring me a pointer, but I'll stand up here and kind of show you. Here we are in New Orleans. We are 30 miles further south. Here's that port. Port Fouchon supports about 90% of all deep offshore oil. The federal government gets $6 billion a year from royalties and leases from the support of this port. We only have 27,000 people in here, but they're very important people because they're my family and friends. Okay, and that's what we look a lot differently from the way you look at it. We don't worry about anything but one thing. Keeping water out of people's homes and businesses. It's not about, you know, a checklist. It's about what is the best way we can do that. And we've run into some real problems. Pre-Katrina, the standards that were employed were expensive, but we could get by with the situation that we had. Post-Katrina, because of the improvements, and they are improvements, and because of the standards being so high, the cost of building levees skyrocketed. But it didn't start just with Katrina. In 1973, we had a big economic jump in this country. Prior to 73, you could build a levee for maybe 25 cents a cubic yard. Okay? And then after 73, the prices escalated tremendously. When I started working in 1980, we were building levees at
close to anywhere from 85 cents to $1.25 a cubic yard. That has gone up. But post-Katrina in the New Orleans area, because of the criteria of having almost pure clay, making sure compaction or high levels of compaction, all of these have raised the cost of levees in New Orleans. Mr. Briscoe, you could say, up to $45 a cubic yard? Well, in our area, no way we could afford that. But we looked at improvements that we felt were justified after Katrina. And those improvements cost us a little bit of money, but we're building levees in our area for about $6 to $9 a cubic yard. Now, they are not as strong and as good, but they don't have to be as strong or as good as a $45 cubic yard levee. It only has to hold back the water. And that may sound like it's the same thing, but it's not. We know that this system, Lafourche Parish is second only to Key West of having hurricanes and tropical storms. And the last flooding we had was in 1985 when the system was not completed. The circle wasn't finished. Since we completed the circle in 1993, all the storms that hit Louisiana, we have not flooded. People to the east, to the west, to the north have flooded. We have not. We've been able to stay just above it. And what we have found when it comes to and that's another little problem we have, how you define levee. When we say levee, we mean something made of earth, okay? If it's a wall, we call that a hard structure or a floodgate, because the engineering for a wall and a floodgate, to me, has to be a lot more stringent than that of a levee. Levee, just you throw up a levee, and it'll handle 90% of the forces it's designed for. You know, if it can stand up, it'll fall apart. It's not there. So right off the bat, it's bulk against bulk. You don't have to do, the engineering doesn't have to be quite as good. And the other thing is we get the closest stuff we can. It might not be the best stuff, but you get the closest stuff, and then you engineer it to the strength you need. Now, even in the Netherlands, they use sand. You know, in New Orleans, you cannot let a grain of sand get inside your levee almost. In the Netherlands, it's actually part of their defense system, but they understand that they need to maintain it, that it erodes very quickly. So they might have an area that might be hundreds of yards wide at a certain elevation. A storm will come and eat up some of it. Well, they know immediately they need to replace that sand. The point is, use the materials there and then understand your risk. The other thing we do, for a number of years I was the emergency manager, but I'm very fortunate. In my area, I have access to a newspaper. I can get almost anything I want in it. There's a radio talk show. I can get on there whenever I want to. And we even have a cable vision station that people actually look at when we have our meetings. So we tell people, look, we guarantee that we've taxed them. We have probably taxed our people more than almost anybody in the country. We doubled our millage tax in 96 after Clinton and Gingrich couldn't get a loan. Federal money slowed down, so we doubled our property tax. After Katrina, we were expected to be in the fourth supplemental, where we were left out completely. So went back to the people. We passed a one-penny sales tax, 82% approval. It still put that penny tax put us above everybody around us, and yet we still got 82% approval on that tax. And we've continued to build the levee, but we have come up with some guidelines for our engineers, but they're not close to as stringent as the guidelines in New Orleans. So there's a real conflict there. And the guidelines in New Orleans has caused problems for everybody in our area, because no engineer wants to build something below the standard that's accepted. So we're working with the state to try and find a place that we know for sure you're improving the levee, but we're not saying it's as good as the standards that the Corps has, but we know that it will function. The other important thing is that we tell our people, no levee system that you can guarantee can stop all flooding events. We tell our people that. We tell them we're better off today than yesterday, we'll be better off tomorrow than today, but we never guarantee they won't flood. And I'll bring up the list from the Hurricane Center, from 1900 all the way through Katrina to Gustav and storms. And I'll show them the storms that had we had the critical path of that storm would have flooded our area. For us, Katrina, the backside of the eye hit Grand Isle over here. Okay? Devastated Grand Isle. We're over here. We had about maybe a 6-foot storm surge. Had Katrina, instead of being here, had been here, we would have been destroyed worse than St. Bernard Parish, which had 64,000 people and barely a handful of buildings did not flood. So we explained that to them. But after Katrina, a lot of things were misunderstood. The evacuation of New Orleans is one point. People don't know that that was a tremendously successful evacuation. Anybody that had the means and the will to get out was able to get out in time. 3 weeks later, Houston tried to get out the way of Rita and failed miserably. Now, yeah, it's terrible about the people that were stuck in the city, the 100,000. But still, the people who had the will and the way were able to get out. Again, knowing the risk that was out there. But those are types of things. And the thing about Katrina, it pushed a 28-foot storm surge. The worst part of the flooding was in Waveland, Mississippi. Waveland is 23 feet above sea level. Any place that would have gotten the worst of Katrina from Brownsville, Texas to Maine would have been destroyed. So we have to understand, you know, we have to understand the truth about these things. We don't talk real well about it. Anyway, we'll talk more about this later. I hope you have a few other questions.
Professors like PowerPoint slides, so we don't have to remember what we're going to tell you. We just read it to you. My title of mine is when will FEMA get on the same page with all the other federal agencies? Next. This is the problem, if we want to look at it. Hurricanes, far and away, eat up the lion's share of natural hazards, perils, insured losses. We have a system with the Mississippi River system of drainage that started after the 1927 flood that the Corps of Engineers watches over and is responsible for. When they started that in 1928, there was nowhere near as many people to protect as what's occurred in the post-World War II years. We look between 1980 and 2003, we've seen 33 million more people go to coastal areas. By 2003, 23 of the 25 most populated counties in the United States were in coastal areas. By 2008, over half the American population lived within 50 miles of the coast. That's on 17% of the contiguous United States. So you got more and more people living in harm's way, and you're not spending a commensurate amount of infrastructure dollars on increasing protection. You also have to remember, when you look at statistics like this, statistics lie. They're always biased towards those events that occur with the greatest frequency. So if we had a volcanic event, which the only one on, we don't even show volcanoes on here, but we had a large volcanic event like Mount St. Helens again, that's going to change this apportionment. So they're always biased by the more frequent things. Next. Okay, in 2011, national academies were hired to look at the National Flood Insurance Program, specifically with respect to the policy on levees and levee protection and how that's adjudicated. The program is $17.5 billion in the red at that point, and no partial credit was given by FEMA if you're in anything less than an accredited 100-year frequency levee. And so it's an off and on, black and white. You're either in it or you're out of it. And the 100-year levee has become an off-on light switch that is politically untenable, because all these people that have levees, they can't afford those districts to keep them at 100-year level. They still got a levee there, and now it's, you know, 12 inches shorter than it should be, or it's not maintained quite as well, and so they are not eligible for any kind of flood insurance. So they're squawking to their elected representatives, as you can imagine. Next. So they put together this panel. I was one of the members of that panel, the National Academy panel. FEMA paid, I think, $2.4 million to us. Next picture, to go around the country, look at all these different things. I was the secretary, and I was the artist. So I want to just, it's quicker to walk through it with pictures than to look at words. But if you look up here in the top, terminology, there's the low flow channel. The Q100 is the 100-year flow level. A 2% levee would capture and protect you from a 50-year flood. So we call that a 50-year levee. The National Flood Insurance Program considers only a 100-year flood, so there's the 1% levee that you're in or out of the program. And there are a lot of facilities, like down in Texas City and around Galveston and Houston, where they have 500-year levees. And they used them when Hurricane Ike came through in September 2008. And so there are places that are higher value where the insurance carriers and the federal government and state governments have come in, and they're putting in something bigger. We see a lot of these in the Sacramento area right now, like around where the Sacramento airport is. If we look down here where we're at right now you have this zone behind the 100-year accredited levee, And you look at the levels of the floor levels in those areas, and over here you have an A zone, and it's completely different. And it assumes that the 100-year levee is never going to fail. And of course, we know that that's not true, that levees are about 500 times more likely to fail than dams are, because they don't receive the kind of engineering expertise and attention and quality assurance that a dam does. So what the panel ended up recommending is what the Bureau of Reclamation and the U.S. Corps of Engineers has already done, and that's go to a risk-based system of assessment, where you'd have a risk-based premium along this red line. The farther away you get from the channel, you would pay less and less and less. And if you're down in a deeper hollow, your premium's going to be higher than the guy on the hill next to you. And this is all very easy, able to do today. It's not easy, but it's within our technology, certainly, to do this. And so you have to go out, and yet, and the Corps of Engineers has and the Bureau have developed model systems to look at fragility curves and look at all the different ways that levees could be failed. This is the 10 we came up with. We actually there's 12 of them there. We've actually come up with some more since then. And you factor these things in to a decision tree matrix to try and come up with what you feel they should pay, what the risk is. Next. So we put this together into a report, and we delivered it to them. It was on a fast track the whole time. They said, you know, we have to have this by April 2013 or May. And we went out and we tried to sell it, General Galloway and myself, and principally, and FEMA rejected it. They said, that's too hard. Well, everybody feels that something's too hard if you haven't done it before. But that would put them on the same page with their sister agencies, and it would give us what the people really want. So that's the thumbnail sketch.
Great, thank you. Before we leave you, David, I want to come back to this report that you worked on. Not long after this report, FEMA and the Army Corps came out with its own report about the flood insurance program and assessing risk, and it was partially about moving to a risk assessment-based method of measuring levees and determining their effectiveness, and Tammy talked a little bit about that as well. Do you feel like that they've moved in the right direction with the recommendations they came out with in that report?
It's a start. It's better than where they were. What they're using was inherited in 1968 from a system that the Tennessee Valley Authority came up with in 1943. And it was a totally untested system, and it was intended to try it for the NFIP in a meeting in Chicago as a temporary means. It wasn't ever written to, you know, it wasn't ever intended to get into the Code of Federal Regulations and be an, you know, unchangeable thing, because it wasn't based on a lot of probabilistic hazard assessment or statistics even. It was just they decided to pick 100 years, and you can only know what a 100-year flood is if you have 1,000 years of record. We don't have 1,000 years of record. So right away, you have a lot of uncertainty that's there in the program. So what we're trying to say is use a modern risk-based assessment. The Corps has really ramped up on this. They went out and got the people. They went out and had their people get the education they need to do a probabilistic hazard assessments. They're doing that through two regional centers that they have out west and out east. We think FEMA should be on the same page with them. So the sooner that happens, the better it's going to be for the people, for the population of the country.
Okay, well, let's give Tammy a chance to address that. Tell us about that report that the Army Corps did with FEMA, and why was it done, and where are you with the recommendations that you came out with there?
So I think you're referring to the Corps FEMA Flood Accreditation Task Force, and that report was completed back in November of 2013. And so that task force was created as a result of the transportation bill, the MAP 21 bill, and it was section 100226 of that law. And what that report does is it better clarifies linkages between the Corps and FEMA as it relates to both agencies being able to share levee information and exchange levy information for the purposes of both agencies. So I think a few years ago when we were talking about levy accreditation for the NFIP and the Corps Levy Safety Program, both our agencies were pretty consistent in saying we work well together, we share information, but they're two different programs and for two different purposes.
So in other words, in some cases, the two agencies weren't speaking the same language.
I think we were clarifying the purposes and the differences between the two agencies, the authorities, and the programs. I think we're going to see a change in that. Both our agencies now are going to be saying that, you know, actually our programs are very complementary. And in fact, we have pretty much the same goals, that we want to provide best available information to the public and community so decisions can be made. So specifically for the Corps of Engineers, we are moving forward on those actions identified in that report, and there's two specific ones I want to mention here, is we are adapting our risk assessment process, a more detailed risk assessment process, to include an evaluation that makes a statement about the performance of the levee system we're evaluating and how it could perform against the 1% flood event, or in other words, a 100-year or base flood event. And what that means is every time we do a risk assessment, we're going to have information that could be used for FEMA NFIP mapping purposes. Another change that we're making is when I mentioned our levee inspections and our screening process, in those two processes, we're clearly identifying direct links in the information we collect in inspections and screenings and how they relate to specific FEMA accreditation criteria under 44 CFR 6510. So again, what that is going to do is going to hopefully help reduce any redundancies or highlight areas maybe a local community would need to focus on for accreditation purposes. But again, we're going to get more close-knit, and we're in both of our policies, we're going to identify clear direct links between the two agencies.
Okay. And before we leave that subject, I thought it would be helpful to clarify a little bit more the different inspections that the Army Corps is doing. There's the annual inspection, which is primarily a maintenance inspection, operations and maintenance. It doesn't really deal with the engineering of levees. Is that right?
That's correct. So the routine inspection is typically it'll be a visual inspections, and we use the levee inspection checklist, that consistent checklist I spoke about.
So those inspections aren't going to tell us, is the levee high enough, or does it hold back seepage well enough? Is that correct?
Correct. When we talk about performance and how it really addresses the physical condition, what we see out in the field, we do take a look at the original design documents to see if there's any changes in design that could have happened, and we would identify that in the periodic inspection. Where the performance come into play is really during the risk assessment. And so what we're seeing is information from our periodic inspections getting used to the risk assessment screening process, and that's helping us identify, you know, any potential seepage areas or high-risk drivers to the levee.
Okay, and clarify a little bit how a periodic inspection differs from an annual inspection. What additional things do you do in a periodic inspection?
Okay, so we have a separate policy that we issue to address periodic inspections. So for a routine and a periodic, we use the same consistent checklist. So they both start with the physical inspection of the levee itself. For a periodic inspection, what happens is that the team of engineers doing the inspection gets together and they look and make a list of any special considerations specific to that project. So, for example, if you have a levee system that may tie into a roadway embankment, or a levee system that hasn't had their gates tested in a while, so it's a little flexible process where they might add things to a list. Maybe they need to, do a more in-depth culvert inspection. They will add things to that list that are up and beyond what we normally would look at for a routine inspection. On top of that, what they look at as well is they'll collect all the design documents related to that levee, evaluate it, and because, you know, standards are changing, maybe the engineering practice has changed, what we want to flag is anything that's changed as far as state of the practice that we want to flag during that periodic inspection that may impact the levee.
Okay, and you said the periodic inspections will be complete in the end of this year or next year?
probably it's going. They'll be complete in FY 16, fiscal year 16. We're 80% complete with doing the first initial ones of all the federally authorized levies. After that, we do plan to have a regular process in which we conduct a periodic inspection. We are considering is adding a screening to every periodic inspection in the future, just to ensure that we're doing that screening level risk assessment on a routine basis.
Okay, and how will the results of the periodic inspection be released? Will it be released like the routine inspections that you've done?
So we've completed 80% of the periodic inspections now. They are provided to the sponsor. They're released in the same fashion. Each individual location decides on whether or how to release it to the public. But at a minimum, we post the ratings and an executive summary for each periodic inspection in the National Levy Database.
So the National Levy Database would be the place to go to find out if a periodic inspection has been done on a particular levy?
Yes, and it'll include the rating and the executive summary from the report.
Okay. Now, one of the things in the Joint Task Force report that the Army Corps did with FEMA, it talked about how the results could increase costs for levy agencies. For instance, by identifying additional work that a levy might need. Can you tell us a little about that?
I'm not sure exactly what the context is. What a risk assessment would?
The risk assessment, yeah. That was one concern that was identified in that task force report, that the ultimate cost to the local agency could increase.
Yeah, I think the goal is to identify what the risk is and what are the risk drivers. And so anything that we identify, you know, to me would be a joint solution in which, you know, where does the local community want to focus their attention or their efforts? In some cases, it might be seeking accreditation for FEMA purposes. In other cases, they might have a significant enough risk driver in the levy or maybe they want to focus their attention on evacuation planning. So I don't know about the increase in cost comment per se, but it's new information. And I could see, you know, but we don't know, you know, in certain cases, it depends on what that information is. And so it's different information that they're going to have to consider when planning their priorities.
Okay. Hand that mic to your left, and let's have Wendell talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. It's raised the costs. Okay. And that is the big issue. No one likes the flood. I can guarantee you. Nobody. Except the people who have repetitive loss properties that have made money. And we finally fixed that issue. The flood issue is tied with the flood insurance program, and there's because they're to some extent two different problems, but they're brought together. But to get the new criteria, talking about the improvements, I don't think anybody disagrees with the information. It's can we afford it? And the problem that has occurred is that post World War II, we stopped building our houses, and not only that, we didn't know what was safe and wasn't safe. We started being a mobile society. I know my great-grandfather built a house. He evacuated or actually moved from an area on the coast to 30 miles inland because of a flood that took place in 1893. Everybody who grew up in the area knows that the high land is near the waterway and that the land tapers. Other parts of the United States, that's not the case. But the fact of the matter is we started being a mobile society, and not only that, we stopped building our houses. Why did we build houses? For comfort and for protection. Post-World War II, we didn't build houses anymore. Developers built houses, and their motive is profit motive. And we need to demand safe houses again. That's part of what we need to train ourselves to do. The other thing is all the information that both of y'all talked about is to get the public to understand it, because that's where we hit against the wall, is that this is all accurate information, yet when you get it out to the public, the reason why FEMA doesn't do exactly what we need to do is because the public will demand that they cannot go from paying $800 a year in flood insurance to $25,000 a year, the way the rules are. We have to do a better job of explaining to the public the problem. And then it took us actually 60 years to get this deep in this problem, to try to do it overnight. And this was the problem with Biggert Waters. It tried to solve the problem overnight. And that will always, I don't believe we'll ever have success at that. But what we need to do is to plan over the next 20 to 30 years of getting out of this cycle that we're in. And there's a big difference with people who go to the coast just to go to the coast because it's nice, and people who go to the coast because that's where they work. Here in South Louisiana, we live in the Great Delta of North America. There's no other geology like ours. And it was bought because Jefferson knew the Midwest couldn't be great without having it.
So what you're saying is you need sort of a gradual approach to strengthen and make your levees bigger over time rather than having to come up with all the money.
It's not just levees. You have to look at the whole approach of how we build homes, why we are where we are. Levees are part of it, but the flood insurance is part of it. I was talking to a gentleman and said, look, as bad as that, yeah, you look at the flood insurance program, I think out of I think something like 42 years of the insurance program, only 9 of them have gone in the red. Now, they went big in the red, but the only 9. Then you can argue, well, when you do insurance, you know, if you get an outlier like Katrina, something outside of what you know, when you're based on a 100-year program, that doesn't quite make sense in how you do things. But that's where our problem is. It's not the knowledge of doing it a better way. It does increase the cost. People can't afford it. But we need a fair way to make that transition. That's what we haven't. I don't think we found yet. But I think that's what we need to do is go through a transition that we deal with the facts. We have a destination at the end of the road, but we don't inflict it on people. I mean, they're truly people who have never flooded in our area. We're going to see their insurance go from $600 to $25,000. They would have left and walked away from their homes. Banks would have collapsed. And there's a part of the economy that actually we all need that would have a need in it.
Well, I don't want to dwell too much on flood insurance here, but David, can you suggest a kind of a compromise position between what we've just heard in terms of giving people an opportunity to strengthen their levees in a manner that's affordable?
Well, I think we're heading in the right direction. You have to make people aware of what the risks are. I mean, if we look at flood losses, more than 50% of all the dollars in flood losses are all post-1993. So we're, and part of that is that we have so much more property being damaged in the coastal areas. That's probably the principal reason. And so when you build in a place like that, there has to be a political, muscle to look at the Code of Federal Regulations and update it once in a while. I mean, the technology has really come a long way since 1943 and 1965, and we should be periodically looking at these things. I mean, that's what happened in the 2011 flood, with New Madrid versus the New Madrid floodway, and the judges' hands were tied because back when they came up with all that in 1928, it was a different situation. You didn't have, all this rich agricultural property worth a lot more money than the town of Cairo. But the law never got changed to reflect the change in society.
So it's not because levees are necessarily weaker than they used to be. It's because we've put more value behind them. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and we're making levees stronger than we used to be. There's no question about that. I mean, if you look at what's gone in post-Katrina, it's a different world. Give the Corps credit there. They've come a long way in just the last 9 years.
And the risk assessment, Tammy, that you talked about, tell us how that fits in here specifically. Is it intended to help people understand better what's at stake behind the levees with all the changes that have occurred in those communities?
Yes, so it takes into account the current situation that's there, but what's a value with a risk assessment is it allows us to look at other information than just the traditional deterministic approaches we would take to analyze a levee. So we look at historic performance, we look at and talk about those different ways that a levee could potentially fail and do a probable failure modes analysis. We take into account what's behind their levee. So each levee is different, the consequences may be different. So those all are rolled up into a risk assessment. And then when you have that basic information, what you could start looking at is how do I optimize and spend my resources wisely in order to reduce the most amount of risk in that area. And I think a higher level risk assessment, you can start tweaking different alternatives and say, well, you know, if I have an evacuation plan or overtopping section in a certain spot, how does that impact the total risk? And I think it just leads to some better decision making in a times that where we have constrained resources.
I'd say the biggest improvement in flood protection actually is GPS coming along, at least in our area.
Right.
Our benchmarks move. We have people talk about sea level rise. Well, in our area, in South Louisiana, sea level rise is the icing, but the cake is subsidence. We have areas in the last 100 years that have lost 4 feet of elevation, 1 foot to subsidence, and I mean 1 foot to sea level rise and 3 feet to subsidence. So having GPS now accurate levels. In fact, I remember this is pre-Katrina. Again, you do inspections. I ride my levee at least once a week because it's like a boat. One hole will sink the boat. So you've got every inch of a levee you have to pay serious attention to. But I could tell the top of the levee did not look like it was some 10 feet above the waterline, just eyeballing it. And sea level, I know it's about 0 to 1, and things didn't look right. When GPS came in, first place, LSU set up a good program. They came to our area. And I because of that, now I can use the resources and hit the worst spots and know that the worst spots. You can eyeball it, and you cannot tell a 2 foot drop, but with GPS you can maximize your dollars, and that has been the biggest flood protection technical increase that's happened. And it was happening just before Katrina hit, actually.
And one of the things that struck me early on in writing about levees is that, and I think you all would agree, is you're never done building levees. They have to be maintained. They have to be modified over time due to storm damage and sea level rise and decay.
But there's another part to that, which is not just the maintenance of what it is. I don't know of anybody who can guarantee that you're not going to flood. So I know my philosophy is I'm going to build a levee as high as I can afford to build. And I'm going to keep on building because that was 28 feet for Katrina. But that's not to say there's another storm that would do more. And we get to the point of what is the return on the investment that you're doing. That all plays into it. I mean, we all do risk, and it's reducing that risk to a certain level. But I know in our area where we have tremendous work, we had some of the lowest unemployment in the country over the last 10 years. And yet we are at total risk because the infrastructure, we can't guarantee it's going to protect the people and the buildings and investment that's been made. And I think that happens in a lot of places where you have earthquakes, people know that's going to happen. So you spend as much money as you can afford to mitigate what damage might take place, and knowing that we can't take care of all damage.
We're going to go to questions from the audience soon. Can I get an idea how many questions, how much interest we have? Okay. Wendell, let me just ask you real quick. Are your levees 100-year certified?
They were. But then Katrina hit, and the Corps said, oh, we need to make a new 100-year levee. So overnight, we were decertified. And then when the Fourth Supplemental came along, we were not included money-wise. The $14 billion went to the levee systems right around New Orleans. So overnight, we were decertified. So from that point on, I've been raising the levees, knowing that I can't get to that 100-year certification right now, not with the funding that I have.
So that means all the property owners in your district have to have flood insurance, is that right?
Well, they have to anyway. They have to have flood insurance even though they have the levee system. But we, because it's not all or nothing anymore, now they're looking at what a non-100-year system, what it will provide. We've done engineering studies. In fact, we did an engineering study right after Katrina, and when FEMA came with the maps and talked about us being decertified, what we found was a still level water had a trickle over the levee system. And if assuming you don't have a failure, the water level could pond to maybe a plus one. Now, our building elevations right now are up to 3.5 feet. So theoretically, if you went through that scenario, we're protected for the 100-year storm, but because it overtopped on the still water, they basically said the levee didn't exist, even though they let roadways exist, sand dunes, but levees technically were taken out of the computer model, making it a very inaccurate computer model.
David, did your panel have a solution to the kind of situation that Wendell's talking about?
Yeah, that was what we heard all over the country. We went to five different regions, and they were all three-day meetings, and we listened to all the different levels, both the government people and the levy district residents. And what we heard is, you know, we want to get credit for whatever we got out there, and we want it to be a fair, apply to everybody, not pork barrel, you know, over here, over there, just because you're in New Orleans, you get more protection. You know, we want it to be equitable, and that's doable within the within the technical expertise of the age we live in, with geographical information systems and with satellite GPS ability. I mean, those are all doable things, and the panel was unanimous on that. There was no dissent on that at all, and it wasn't all just academics. It was industry people, even an ex FEMA assistant director, and people from the insurance industry were on that panel.
Okay, Tammy has something she'd like to add there.
I more of a question for Wendell, just a point of clarification, because I didn't want to leave it to make it sound like the Corps decertified the levies. I think we provided information, but you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the local community or local levy district or sponsor always has the ability to seek a FEMA accreditation on their own. So I didn't want to leave the impression that the Corps was preventing that action from taking, or FEMA was waiting on us, you know, to verify something.
But the difference is, when you have a Corps-certified levy, FEMA accepts it. Okay, by being decertified, FEMA hadn't. But then we have to go get our own engineers to get that type of acceptance. Okay,
but you have the option to do that.
Oh, I know we can do it, but the fact, but the fact is that because overnight the 100-year storm was changed, that it, to some extent that's not a fair way to kind of do things. In the other parts of New Orleans, they were given the money to get, and that's the Powell, I think it's called the Powell program. Mm-hmm. They were given the money, and if you have the money to get to the 100-year, FEMA will continue that. If you're left out of that, and we were left out of that, we went from being certified and overnight being decertified, which could have led to tremendous elevations in flood insurance. We saw the maps, our levees were taken out, which was not the factual situation. They actually stopped water, and in fact, we have not flooded in the storms. And now, again, as I mentioned, though, there are storms out there that would have put water over the top, and we need to be we are honest with our people and knowing the risk, and not tell everybody whether you paid your house or not, you should buy flood insurance, and we continue to raise the levees as high as we can because the risk is there.
Okay, let's take some questions here. Who'd like to throw up a question?
And I apologize if everybody else in the room knows this already. This is I'm Veronique LaCapra, St. Louis Public Radio. Can you just connect the dots of the bits and pieces that people have been talking about in terms of the link between, well, first off, the role of FEMA and the role of the Corps in terms of certifying or accrediting levies, whatever the right terminology is, and how that relates to flood insurance?
Sure, I can take a stab at that, and then we'll have the experts clarify if necessary. But well, FEMA is the flood insurance agency, and it works together with the Army Corps to decide whether levees are up to the 100-year standard. And is no? All right. We'll let Tammy answer that. Keeping in mind, Tammy doesn't work for FEMA and doesn't speak for FEMA, but she works for the other half.
Right. So FEMA is the federal agency that administers the National Flood Insurance Program, and that program is strictly voluntary. So they work on a community-by-community basis. So when a community signs up to participate in the National Flood Insurance Program, in turn, they have to commit and pass local ordinances to say that they are going to do certain floodplain management activities. And this is all covered by FEMA's CFRs. Now, when you hear the term levy certification, levy accreditation, that plays a part in the National Flood Insurance Program. And that decides how, and the CFR for that is 6510. And FEMA uses that criteria and that CFR to determine how they map areas that are behind levees, and links it to whether flood insurance is required or not if you have a federally backed mortgage. So So the requirements for FEMA to map a levee as showing that it will perform at the 100-year or 100-year flood event is in that CFR. And that's completely can be done outside of the Corps of Engineers. So the local communities can provide the data to FEMA. And if FEMA, if they're showing that they meet all those requirements in 6510, if the local community demonstrates that and meets all those requirements, then FEMA will reflect that on a flood insurance rate map, and when the what it will result in is everyone that's in that behind that levee in the levied area, they're not under mandatory flood insurance purchase. So it's an economic incentive for many communities. I will point out that it doesn't mean they can't buy flood insurance. If the community or county is a participant in the National Flood Insurance Program, they always have the option to buy flood insurance, whether their levy is recognized by FEMA or not. I just want to just quickly mention the Corps' role in all this. So the Corps can provide data to help supplement the locals' efforts to seek accreditation under the NFIP, but it's really a local community's decision. In some cases, if the local community that's behind a levy that's operating maintained by the Corps will provide the data to FEMA on their behalf. If we're doing a current construction project or ongoing project and the local community would like to be accredited under FEMA CFR, we'll provide the information on the community's behalf. So, as I mentioned before, we are direct linking to better exchange levy information when there's opportunities to do so.
Just to clarify, real quick, CFR is Code of Federal Regulations. For anyone who doesn't know, there's been a lot of references to that. It just refers to federal law.